the TV and it starts to make a bit of noise. So the parents are like, all right, well, I'll let them have their space. I'll let them have their time. I'll go to my office and I'll do my work there. But it isn't long before the noise of the TV infiltrates their hearing there and they think, oh, look, it's okay. I'll just pop some music on. That'll drown out the TV and I'll be able to concentrate. So they pop on some of their favourite tunes. But not long later, the voices from the TV start to overpower their music. So they reach over and turn up the volume on their music a bit more and get back into the work. But on and on it goes. Keep reaching over and have to turn up the volume to overpower the TV that somehow just keeps getting louder. Until the point where they reach to turn over the volume and they realize they've got their music cranked to the full and they can't turn it up even more, but they can still hear the TV and it's doing their head in. So they burst out into the living room, look at the child on the lounge and say, do you think you could have that TV any louder? To which the teenager replies, what? Can't hear you. So the parent speaks even louder and more firmly. Why is the TV so loud? No need to yell at me, replies the child. I'm not yelling, yells the parent. If you didn't have the TV so loud, you might be able to hear me the first time. Well, you're the one playing music so loud that I can't hear my show, protests the teen. How dare you talk to me like that, the parent screams. Get to your room. This is unfair, declares the teen. I wasn't doing anything wrong. This is all your fault. That's it, demands the parent. You can kiss Netflix goodbye for the next month. I hate you, cries the teen as they stamp off to their room. Familiar scenario, correct? On and on it goes, back and forth, round and round, never ceasing. Misunderstanding leading to disagreement. Disagreement leading to hostility, and hostility leading to broken relationship. But that's not just the scene with parents and teenagers, right? It plays out in relationships both small and large right around the world. This cycle of snowballing hostility is common to humanity. Husbands and wives, teachers and students, bosses and employees, the political left and the political right, different racial groups, different ideologies, different countries, even different religions. This never-ceasing unrest, anger, and hostility has dominated the landscape of human history and has left pain and brokenness in its wake. This is why, when asked for what their greatest hope for humanity is, everyone from the elderly to primary school students, from world leaders to Miss Universe contestants, respond with what is a heart's cry for world peace. World peace. No more war. No more hostility. No more inequality. No more broken relationships. This is our great hope. This is the great hope of humanity. But the problem is, this hope continues to evade us. Peace continues to evade us. No matter how much we wish for it, how much we educate ourselves, how many technological advances that we make, how more informed we are, how many thoughts and prayers we share on Facebook, we are further from world peace than ever before. There's more war, more terrorism, more racism, more broken marriage, more bullying, and more violence. This has led some to feel like if there is a God, he must have abandoned us a long time ago. Surely if there was a good and all-powerful God who created us, he would have stopped us from causing all this hurt to one another. But the passage we looked at today and the story of Good Friday that we've heard today actually paints a very different picture. In the Colossians passage, listen to the beautiful language that is used to describe Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God. When you look at Jesus, you actually look at the very image of God. Jesus is like the mirror image of God. He's everything that is God wrapped up in the form of a man. the firstborn of all creation. Not in the sense that he was the first one born, but that he takes the role of a firstborn son over all creation. So he represents his father perfectly. He inherits the father's estate. He carries the father's name and reputation. For by him all things were created. All things were created through him and for him. He is both the initiator of creation and he is also the purpose of creation. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He stands apart and beyond everything else, and he is the glue that holds all life together. The author here is going out of their way to magnify the spectacular splendor of Jesus, his equality with God, and his supremacy over all things. And so if this is who Jesus is, so high and mighty, we would expect him to want nothing to do with our broken, hostile, and war-torn world in which we live. But in the same breath that the author praises the highness and the hugeness of Jesus, he unpacks something quite shocking as well. Verse 19, "For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross." See, the story of Good Friday tells us that God, being so passionate about this broken world, sent his son, his precious son, into this broken world to reconcile this broken world to himself, to restore our broken relationship with him, to give us the one thing we so desperately need, peace. But that peace came at a cost. The story tells us that when this supreme Jesus came and walked amongst us, showed us the fullness of God. He healed the sick and gave sight to the blind, cared for the outcast, restored the broken, filled the world around him with peace, did everything that we would ever hope God might do for us, bring restoration, bring peace, answer the heart cry of the world for war, peace. When Jesus did all of this for us, humanity treated him with the same hostility that has plagued us forever. They mocked him. They flogged him. They rendered him powerless. They beat a crown of thorns onto his head, dressed him in a mock royal robe. They chanted and cried out for his execution, even at the pronouncement of his innocence. They dragged him outside the city and they killed him on a cruel Roman cross. I don't know about you, but when I hear the account of the crucifixion like we did this morning, it makes me feel just a little bit uncomfortable that anyone is capable of doing this to anyone, let alone humanity doing it to the one who showed them God and peace to the full. But this is the story of Good Friday. It was almost as if humanity packaged all the hostility of 4,000 years of humanity into one missile and unloaded it on Jesus. And yet our Colossian passage tells us that this is how Jesus made peace. He made peace by the blood of his cross. This cross of hostility that was thrust upon Jesus was actually the means by which Jesus would atone for all of our hostility. See, any cycle of hostility thrives on hurt. It snowballs on hurt. As long as we think the hurt that I feel is more important than the hurt others feel, we will continue to inflict pain on the one we think is causing our hurt until they give in to us eventually. So things continue to snowball out of control. until one of the parties takes it upon themselves to swallow their pride and absorb the hurt they feel rather than inflicting it back onto the others around them. It takes the parent of the teenager being mature enough to hold their tongue, to take a breath, consider the needs of their child, to stop all of the yelling and insults spiraling towards that hostile situation. And this is what Jesus does, but in an even more spectacular way. See, while humanity was caught in a cycle of hostility towards one another, God wasn't part of that cycle. He wasn't responsible for it. He created us to be in his image. And within God's image, Father, Son, and Spirit, there's just harmony. There's peace. There's beauty. There's just wonder. And yet us, created in his image, broke that community with our hostility, with our pride, with our desire to feel our own hurt as more important than the hurt of others. He wasn't responsible for it. He was completely innocent. Even Pilate, a Roman ruler, sees Jesus, looks at him, questions him, and finds no guilt in him. He wasn't responsible for our mess, yet he chose to take responsibility for our mess. He chose to absorb the hurt and hostility into his own body to show us how deeply he cared for us and to restore our brokenness. When the world inflicted its greatest hostility upon Jesus, how did he respond? With silence. Silent before his accusers, he stood. When they hung him on a cross, all that came from his mouth was, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they are doing." When we inflicted Jesus with hurt and hostility as a humanity, Jesus responded by absorbing that into himself. He took it in full. The Colossian passage continues, verse 21. "And you, who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him." God knows our hostile minds. He knows the times we have failed. But he does not look down on us with condemnation. He comes to us with compassion. He does not run away from us in shame. He embraces us with forgiveness. He is not indifferent to the brokenness of humanity. He stood in our situation and absorbed the worst that humanity had to offer. Far from being absent in our brokenness, God is insanely present in our brokenness. He was pleased to have his son Jesus come so close to our brokenness that it broke him. Pleased not because of the pain inflicted, but because of the salvation it secured and the hope it gave. I don't know where you stand with Jesus this Good Friday, whether you believe in him or not, whether you think he is everything that the Bible makes him out to be, or whether you think he's a bit of a man myth, just a historical exaggeration of a really awesome guy. But what I do know is we all need the Jesus that we've heard about this morning. We all need someone from outside our situation to come and absorb our hostility so that we might have a hope of actually finding peace. So if you look out at this broken world, if you look out at the hostility around you in the world, if you watch the news and your heart breaks, if even in your own neighborhood and your own home, you long for more harmony and peace and quiet, then I would plead for you to reach out to the one who stood in our place, who absorbed our hostility, tasted our brokenness, so that we might have peace.